God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
Created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eye. The Lord spoke. He said, let there be light. And because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to Disciples View. I will say this probably more than once this week as Fauci has been going through questioning. I'll say it and I'll mean it and I'll try to say it well. I don't say it for attention. I think he's a sociopath. I think he may rise to the level of being a psychopath. Tony Fauci here displays all the symptoms of being a sociopath, including blaming everyone else for everything he did.
And do you think the American public should listen to America's brightest and best doctors and scientists, or instead listen to podcasters, conspiracy theorists, and unhinged Facebook memes?
Now, listening to people who you've just described is going to do nothing but harm people because they will deprive themselves of life-saving interventions, which has happened. And you know, some have done studies. Peter Hotez has done an analysis of this and shows that in people who refuse to get vaccinated for any variety of reasons, probably responsible for an additional 200,000 to 300,000 deaths in this country.
Thank you, sir, and your entire team for saving lives in this country. And I'm sorry you have to continue going on with these attacks.
Peter Hotez is basically a diet doctor. He is nobody's expert in anything but getting attention. The study was a thing of a joke. It was a mapping study. There was no real rigor to it. I have this question for Tony Fauci. How did I know? I was one of the hardest radio hosts against you in the country. How did I know? I'm a community college dropout. How did I know? When the Lord allowed me to fill in for Rush Limbaugh. And thank you, Lord. Thank you, Rush. God rest you. Why did you guys panic and start sending angry emails around? How did I know? Know what? Well, number one, how did I know that the injections would be harmful? Common sense. It is simple common sense. The gene sequencing devices caused people's bodies to produce something that was poisonous to the body. Common sense. Our body's immune systems are designed to reject things that can harm us. Common sense. What happens when the body is forced to produce something harmful to itself? Well, it would be a form of derangement. The body is poisoning itself. That's going to cause problems. Common sense. The thing you conned people's bodies into producing, the spike protein, is what it's described as, a spike. It's going to cause blood clots in people, and some major blood clots. It's the single most dangerous element of the COVID flu that you probably paid to have created. How did I know? How did I know? The moment the lockdowns were announced, that they were nonsense. Well, here's how. Because federal dollars are tied to buses, so long as the wheels are moving, the buses in major cities never stop moving. But schools were shut down until within a week. Those schools that had been shut down because those children were going to kill grandma and grandpa were turned into daycare centers. That's how I knew. I was a radio host, and I'm now a podcaster and radio host. How did I know these things? I'm a community college dropout, Tony. How did I know masks didn't work? Well, number one, I read the work of your partners. The largest meta study of randomized clinical trials in history. In history. It took 47 years to compile. Conclusion, masks don't work. So I knew it because of that. I knew it because of common sense. I've worn surgical masks in hospitals. I had to see my dad. I could smell the disinfectants. The molecules of disinfectants are some 10,000 to 100,000 times larger than the molecules of the virus. When you smell a thing, it's because the molecules came in through your nose. So how did I know? Tony Fauci is probably a sociopath. He may well be a psychopath. This is the first time I've seen this. It's a national media organization recognizing something that we've known for 3 years. This is from the Telegraph. Headline, COVID vaccines may have helped fuel rise in excess deaths. Experts call for more research into the side effects and possible links to mortality rates. How did people like Geert Vandenbosch know what sort of illnesses would be caused by this? See, it's not common sense. It's a very specific set of knowledge. I had the common sense. Many people did. I was far from alone. I felt alone in talk radio, explaining it that way. Geert Vandenbosch is an immunologist. He knew because it's his business to understand how these things interact in the body. He knew introducing a so-called vaccine, as you did at that point of the virus's expansion, would lead to mutations, and it did. He knew it would make the virus stronger, and it did. Former medical officers of Pfizer, who had designed drugs, knew that this would cause myocarditis and pericarditis. Who else knew? The lawyers for the pharma companies. How did they know? Because the doctors at the pharma companies told them. So Tony Fauci says people like me caught 200 to 300,000 people killed by convincing them to not take an injection that stops neither infection nor transmission. How then would it kill people to not take it? It's chilling, on one hand, that a man like this is the highest paid federal employee in history, and that doesn't count the commissions, the rakes, he took from pharmaceutical companies. But this is an old, old game. People so fallen that they'll do this to their fellow human beings for money and for power. It's an old game. After all, the Lord Jesus was taken to the cross in pursuit of power, maintaining it, denying the power of God Almighty. And so Tony Fauci denies the very common sense of grandmas. If you're feeling unwell, get in the sunlight, get lots of vitamin C and D, and rest. Democrats Representative Kathy Koster actually thanks Tony Fauci for allowing his paymasters in pharma to skip the step of actually testing the modified RNA shots.
What you and your team did to speed the development of the safe and effective COVID-19 vaccine was remarkable. Dr. Fauci, I'm sorry for the personal attacks you have received and may have to deal with today. I want you to know that the vast majority of Americans appreciate your work over the years.
When did the left become sycophants for Big Pharma? When did that happen? How did that happen? Some would say, I guess, that it came about through media influence, and they'd be right. But wait, the media used to be big critics of Big Pharma. When did that change? Some might point out the money that pharma controls 9 out of 10 of the top advertising slots in traditional media like Fox News and ABC News. They went and purchased places in sports and the NFL, and all that comes with an expectation that they're not going to be seeing their products trashed or even reviewed, honestly. Some might say that. But I think the people who pushed the COVID response with an eye towards making sure everybody got injected with mRNA, I think they saw something different. I think they saw an opportunity to take people who have no real mission in life and to give them one. People who lack meaning in life. People who lack a solid foundation on which to judge whether a person is deceitful or not. The solid foundation of the Bible, looking at people through a biblical lens. Are we seeing the fruit of the Spirit in them or the desires of the flesh? What are we seeing? God tells us to not lord our power over others. Any power we're given, we're not to lord over others. Are we watching people lord their power? We are. We're told to not lie. Do these people lie constantly? Yes. So I think they saw an opportunity to divide Americans with some people who would gladly strap on a mask because they're doing something. They're saving people. Smart plan. Congresswoman Jim Jordan said he could get Tony Fauci to commit perjury in about 11 seconds. And would you look at that? Jim Jordan did it.
Do you agree that there was a push to downplay the lab leak theory?
Not on my part.
Really?
Really?
Wow.
Wow.
I think most of the country would find that amazing. I still got 11 seconds.
Well, look at the facts. I've kept an open mind throughout the entire process.
All right, I yield back.
Hilarious. Tony Fauci is on record working behind the scenes to shut down any discussion of the lab leak theory. There was a fantastic event, so obvious. Scientists have said, hey, this came out of a lab until Tony Fauci started handing out money. And then they said, hey, this didn't come out of a lab. And guess what? Now they're back to saying, hey, this came out of a lab. See, Tony Fauci had said that it was podcasters and radio hosts who got 200,000 to 300,000 people killed, even though people like me were right about everything because of common sense God gave us. Praise God. Just notice a pattern here. Just yesterday, federal prosecutors entered some evidence against Hunter Biden. It was a physical item, a laptop. Federal investigators entered this into evidence against Hunter Biden in a trial, stating this was his laptop. Do you remember when irresponsible bloggers and radio hosts were out saying that was Hunter's laptop when it clearly wasn't? Yeah, that was disinformation. Do you remember that? Facebook banned it. YouTube banned it. Do you remember that? Just as they did exactly what Tony Fauci, who's probably a psychopath, said to do. Much more to cover on today's Disciple View. Disciples View, I'm Todd Herman. Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. There are such interesting patterns happening. There's a panic among the elites. It's pretty common. One of my favorite newspaper articles of late is called just that, The Panic of the Elites. It's about an earthquake and resulting fire in Alaska, where the elites panicked, thinking that us bitter clingers, deplorables, normal people would be running around stealing and causing problems and being violent, and it didn't happen. People teamed up and helped each other out. There's an evident panic of the elites. All of the lawfare against President Trump is a panic of the elites. They cannot stomach the idea of them getting slowed down again in their march to have a single-party system. That was not supposed to happen. That's panic. The panic of all the trials, so clearly politicized, is a sign of that. Now there's 45 lawmakers who are speaking out about the figurehead, Biden, being demented and slow and mentally unavailable during meetings. There's panic with leftists. They need to replace Biden. There's panic on the racial front. You just heard in the news on AFR the change in Hispanic support for President Trump. How can this be happening? And the elites have a very small series of tricks they're using. There's the disinformation. It's disinformation, don't you know? Then there is the, well, people threaten Tony Fauci, therefore we shouldn't criticize Tony Fauci. People shouldn't threaten him. And we still get to question him. There's also the absolute obsession to make sure that there is not a single crack in the narrative. This particularly happens in news cycles. And on this front, I'm actually worried about a guy at Fox News. I'm going to start, though, with ABC. Leftist political operative George Stephanopoulos threatened to cut off Trump attorney Will Scharf for claiming Alvin Bragg's case against Trump was politically motivated.
And of course, the attorney general in Manhattan has nothing to do with the Department of Justice. Finally, what do you expect from the sentencing process?
I vehemently disagree that the district attorney in New York was not politically motivated here. And I vehemently disagree that President Biden and his political allies aren't up to their necks in this prosecution. I think the fact
there's no evidence of that, sir, there's no I'm not going to let you continue to say that. There's just zero evidence of that.
Oh, here's some evidence. A guy left the Department of Justice as a senior official there and took a downgrade to work for a local DA. That official had been involved in anti-Trump investigations at the DOJ. Do we need to continue? There's the funding. George Soros funded Alvin Bragg. George Soros is funding much of the lawfare against President Trump. See the panic? I'm a little bit worried about Jess Waters at Fox News. I don't know Jess. I don't watch TV. In show research, if something like this comes up, I'll watch it, but I don't have a TV. I don't watch one. I haven't had one for 25 years. But Jess Waters went and did something you're not to do. He took two big brands, well, one brand, one category, and had a whistleblower talk about how they work together. This is Big Pharma and Big Sugar and how they work together. Here's what a whistleblower told Jess Waters.
We're getting sicker, fatter, more depressed, more infertile because of food. 8 of the 10 leading causes of Americans today are directly tied to food, reversible by food. But we really are gaslighted from that fact, and it's because of a rigged system. And three particular levels I saw is that food companies directly pay medical groups. Coke has funneled millions of dollars, and the American Academy of Diabetes, the American Academy of Pediatrics, as you said, the American Nutrition Association, they've accepted millions of dollars from Coke. And what does that buy? When we have diabetes water, sugar consumption going up among children 100x in 100 years, we have silence from the American Diabetes Association on sugary drinks when 25% of teenagers now are pre-diabetic. They're also, as you've very aptly pointed out, research institutions. And what does that get? What does that 11 times more from food than the NIH? What does that get? It gets the doctors on the USDA nutrition guidelines. Right now, shamefully, and I believe this is the most shameful, violent policy in America, the USDA, our own government, says that a two-year-old, it's okay for them to have 10% of their diet as added sugar. It's a systematic rigging of the institutions of trust. I mean, this is not complicated. And earlier in my career, I saw this. You know, unimpressive PR executives sit around conference rooms and ask, how do we rig? How do we gaslight people, you know, in an Orwellian way from not believing what's right in front of us? 80% of American adults are overweight or obese. 50% of adults have prediabetes or diabetes. We are being brought to our knees by preventable metabolic dysfunction. Pharma is standing silent, and the medical institutions are standing silent because they profit from people being sick, and they're getting sick because of food.
So when we talk on this program about pharma and we talk about sugar, where's God? Here's a fun fact. The more a food looks like what it used to be, the healthier it is for you. In other words, the more it would look like in the garden, the healthier it is for you, the Garden of Eden. The more it would look like the new heaven and the new earth, at which we can guess because we have descriptions of the Garden of Eden, the healthier it is for you. The less recognizable a food as what it used to be, the less good it is for you. Common sense. God gave us bodies that are not horrible mysteries. Sometimes they get mysterious. God has gifted certain people with the ability to understand our brains so that they could actually cut into them and fix them. Can you imagine? Man, I got afraid giving my little girl a haircut when she was 5. Incidentally, I did a good job. She admits it to this day. I'm pretty satisfied with that. I almost said proud. Here's a headline from the Daily Mail. Let's compare this to the way Tony Fauci gaslit America on the COVID flu. Here's the headline. Ultra-processed foods do not cause obesity, says U.S. government's top diet advisors in bombshell review of current evidence. Studies have been biased. Okay, let's apply some common sense. Here's a handful of grain. Okay, I used to eat barley when I was a kid. My mom bought barley to make soup, raw barley. Do you know how much work it is to eat raw barley? I would take a handful of it and chew on it. And A, it tasted great. B, it's pretty potent. C, it's hard work. To take barley and remove it and then pulverize it and then make it into a flour and then bake it and put it into a highly concentrated form, that takes a bunch of work. Now, doing that with machines, where you add to this high fructose corn syrup and you add to this fats that don't belong in our bodies at that level, why would I say that? Take a seed fat. How easy is it to get olive oil? Smash olives, oil. How about seed oil? Not easy. It's not something we would normally get. It's not something our bodies are designed to have at that level. But it's cheaper because it's a byproduct. Olives are food. People eat the food. The olive oil is a byproduct, but it's more expensive. People really don't like eating little tiny seeds, so why not crush them up and take the oil and make money on it? Our bodies aren't designed to consume it. Raw sugar, rather refined sugar. The average American eats 36 pounds of that per year. 36 pounds. That doesn't include sugar from fruits and vegetables and breads and beans. Rices all contain sugars. It doesn't, pastas all contain sugars. This is refined sugar, 36 pounds. In the 1950s, it was 3 pounds. How much work is it to create refined sugar? Think of this. If someone came to you and said, I will pay you $1 million if you, using your own means, can get me 1 pound of refined sugar in granulated form, would you know how to do it? I wouldn't. I guess I could YouTube it. common sense would show that when you take something in these high, high concentrations and you pour them into the body in ways that the body's not set up to deal with, not designed to deal with, it's going to have some side effect. In the case of sugar, it's massive inflammation. It literally, in some ways, bakes your body from the inside out. Fats like seed oils, not to belong in our bodies, have a similar effect. So let's go back to this headline. Ultra-processed foods do not cause obesity, says U.S. government's top diet advisors in bombshell review of current evidence. Studies have been biased. Let's add to this. But let's step back. How much work is it to pick a piece of fruit and eat it? Not much. It's a lot more work to catch a fish, slice it open, gut it, cook it, eat it. Our bodies are designed for these things. Again, if you picture the garden. Of late, there are chemists who work at food companies. And chemists, given minds, great brilliance, God gave them in this area of mathematics and chemistry and understanding how these molecules work together, are taking those skills and, in my judgment, misapplying them to make food addictive. So they key up the exact right mix of salt and fat and sugar, the exact right mix so that when it hits your body, it creates a massive rush of insulin. And you know what happens is people chase the insulin. Did you know that? I didn't know that. I used to weigh 400 pounds. I weigh 207 pounds today. When I weighed 400 pounds, I didn't know what I was chasing. I don't know if you've ever been through this cycle. This is deeply embarrassing. But this is how far I'd gone from God's plan for my body. This is how in the flesh I was. Yes, this is leading somewhere. Do you know where it's leading? It's leading to Pride Month. Oh, it is. It's leading to Pride Month. When I weighed 400 pounds, I used to do the stupidest thing. Driving home, I would jones. I'd be shaking. I had to have fast food. I didn't understand the degree to which chemists were involved in making it addictive. So I would go to one McDonald's and I'd drive up and say, I'll have two quarter pounders, two fries, and a great big Diet Coke. Oh, and a fish sandwich. And they'd give that to me and I would eat it on the way to the next McDonald's. I'd go to the next McDonald's and I'd make sure all the other McDonald's was hidden. I'd chew gum. And believe it or not, this is how bad I was. I was an addict. I was a street addict. I'd pull up in my car and I'd pretend to be ordering for other people. As if the McDonald's up the street had called and said, hey, there's a 400-pound dude with a ponytail driving down to you. So I'd pretend to be on the phone. What, honey? Oh, sure, I'll get that. I'd order the same thing. I was an addict. And a little hamburger, go into a McDonald's once in a while. Some people can handle that. I can't. I'd so given into the flesh that I thought I was hiding it. And yet there's 400 pounds on me. A little bit of sin. People get into sin management mode. I'm watching Pride Month unfold. And I think again about what we in the church community, I think, have failed to do. I didn't have anybody come to me when I weighed 400 pounds to say, hey, brother, your flesh is controlling you. Even my dearest friend, the man who brought me to Christ, never said it because it would be hurtful. But my flesh was controlling me. No one ever said to me, you're out of control. No one ever said, maybe you should stop. See, they didn't know what it was like to be obese, to be addicted to food. They couldn't think of it that way. But I want you to think of this. During Pride Month, we are told that we have to celebrate because this is how these people were made. This is God's design for them. Was that God's design for me? To be eating myself into an early heart attack and death? started with a few hamburgers, and now it was that. It was this food addiction, hiding it or not really because it's all over me. I think of the diseases that are coming in Seattle, and it terrifies me. I have dear friends and family members who are same-sex attracted, and they live within this community, and I read about the massive increase in ocular syphilis. Syphilis of the eyes. I read about structural diseases people are getting. I'm talking about destruction of the body in a muscular sense. And it terrifies me. And Satan takes this stuff that God created, the common blessings of food, as in the garden, and he turns us into food addicts. He takes the great gift of human compassion, feelings of compassion, of empathy, of attraction, of curiosity, of warmth, of engagement that we can get with another human being. And he concentrates it. He takes its huge form, its broad form, all those things I've mentioned, intellectual capacity, sharing of wants and needs, sharing of dreams, of vulnerabilities, of sadnesses, of excitements, of laughter, of activities. And he does a thing like refined sugar. He takes it down to the level of sex. We were not intended for that. We were intended for the broad array of human experiences within the 4 to 5 love categories, not just the eros. And people who are given into this in Pride Month, it's incumbent upon us to think of them as captives, just the way I'd allowed myself to become a captive of Mickey D's. I'm Todd Herman. We'll come back on The Disciples View.
If you're hearing this, you know about AFR, but do you know?
Welcome back to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We will get to the Tower of Babbling. That is a feature that we thank God for placing supposedly wise people up on these tall towers of shaking sand. Let me just finish something off that it's hurting my heart. And that is that I spoke about my food addiction and how bad that was for me. And many, many years ago, I weighed 400 pounds. I beg you, if I, in speaking that, and talking about weighing 207 pounds now, if that hurt you, because I remember, I really do, I remember what it felt like to be called fat or to have someone suggest that. If that hurt you, let me apologize to you. And let me say, God loves you so much, so without regard to that. And when I speak about being addicted to those foods, I really do genuinely believe, and in fact know, that chemists are involved in doing that to you. And I took it upon myself. It was my accountability issue. It's something I decided to allow to happen to me. Obviously, I knew I was heavy. You know it too. But you don't need someone kind of rubbing your face in it. Something tells me someone was hurt. So I just want to step back on that and let you know with absolute certainty and complete sincerity, God has absolutely slapped out of me any form of body shaming. Praise God for that. I just experience and remember so much what that's like. In fact, there was this time, this happened last summer. A friend of mine knows that I've lost a lot of weight, a lot of fat, and knows that I at one point had an endorsement on my podcast by a great company, great, great, great at helping people lose fat. And this gentleman came to me and said, there's a woman in our office who really keeps us together, keeps things running, and she's morbidly obese, and she's been in the hospital a couple of times, you know, things related to this, and we're terrified for her. and she's interested in this company that you've used, but she's afraid to talk to you about it. Would you go talk with her? I said, oh, absolutely. And I went down to speak with her, and it was sad because the first thing she did was begin defending herself. You know, I work all the time. I work 12 hours. I've got three kids. You know, my husband left, and I'm very busy, and I really, you know, there's a lot of work to do. I'm the only finance person here, and I want you to know I try every day to eat salads, and every day I, you know, and I'm listening to this, and my heart is breaking, and I just say, can we pause for a minute? She said, sure. I said, someone else told me your name, but I don't know anything about you. Like, so how long have you lived here? So we talked about Idaho. You said kids, how many? You said three? See, she thought I was there to get to know fat person. So ultimately we did talk about fat loss and how I was doing it and why I like this company. But I also asked her in that, the Lord gave me this, why are you wanting to do this? And she said, because people are worried about me. Why are they worried about you? Well, because I really keep things together here. Is that the extent of it? No, I guess they kind of love me. I said, hey, I'll tell you something. It's not kind of. Now, it doesn't work to guilt people into these decisions. That wasn't my intent at all. But she had so devalued herself from the moment I walked in this posture of defense. She said, okay, I'm going to research this and I may do it. I said, great. I said, you know, I've enjoyed getting to know you. Would you mind if I gave you a hug? And she stood up and I gave her a hug and she started to cry. She said, I'm so sorry. I said, no, it's okay. She said the saddest thing to me. She said, no one likes to hug the fat lady. And I said to her, my dad was obese his whole life. A few short years ago, I weighed 400 pounds. I don't see you that way. God doesn't see you that way. He sees you as his beloved daughter. These are all things God gave me. The conversation was not about food. In that case, it wasn't about food addiction. It was about not denying God's opportunity to love you, to show you complete love, has said that unchangeable, unshakable, committed level of love. I mean, I couldn't develop it at that moment, sitting there in front of that woman, meeting her for the first time. I couldn't do that. God does it. God channeled that. I guess that's a long way of saying, I really do hope that I didn't hurt you in talking about food addiction. And if you are addicted, at the risk of hurting you again, man, please get out of the grip of that stuff, because when it's not Mickey D's, it's going to be Pharma. You know that statement, if you don't make food your medicine, one day medicine will be your food. That's true. That's where I was all those years ago. And yes, I love you and I want you to change because I love you. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower of Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents...
We have the strongest economy in the world today. Right now, today, the United States of America has the strongest economy in the world.
The Tower of Babbling.
Three sound bites in the Tower Babbling. This is the son of George Soros. Some time ago, babbled away about President Trump.
We just heard this point about untrustworthy people, and we talked about things in the United States like checks and balances, which aren't written anywhere, but are customs. And one man, Donald Trump, literally came in and just took that all away.
He went on to say, he said, and he's talking about checks and balances as customs. They're not customs. They are built into our very constitution. They're built into the very way our government structures is structured itself. It's built to make it hard to get things done because we don't want a dictator to be able to get things done. What's remarkable about that, and that's that statement was from some time ago, is there's a fact about President Trump versus Joe Biden. Every single thing the left said about President Trump is actually true of Biden. You can't find one single exception. Trump will lead us to the edge of World War III. The figurehead has our troops headed to the Russian border under the orders of NATO. He'll imprison journalists. Really? Because Biden's people are doing that. It's remarkable. Next up in the Tower Babbling, Maxine Waters, who called for people to get up in the faces of Republican leaders and cheered Black Lives Matter Incorporated, is suddenly worried about political violence.
I am going to spend some time with the criminal justice system, with the justice system, asking them, tell us what's going on with the domestic terrorists. Are they preparing a civil war against us? Should we be concerned about our safety? What is he doing with this divisive language?
Do you remember when, after January 6th, there were fences posted around the many, many state capitals because there were armies, tens of thousands of militia from right-wing domestic terror groups ready to seize Washington, D.C. and Portland, Oregon and Olympia, Washington and capitals around the country, Sacramento. Wow, that didn't happen. But we did, of course, spend the summer watching parts of cities burn down. Heard a bit of this earlier, but it's too good for me. It's too good. George Stephanopoulos is a political operative who pretends to be a journalist. George Stephanopoulos will not allow guests to express opinions not approved by the people who run Joe Biden.
And of course, the Attorney General in Manhattan has nothing to do with the Department of Justice. Finally, what do you expect from the sentencing process?
I vehemently disagree that the district attorney in New York was not politically motivated here, and I vehemently disagree that President Biden and his political allies aren't up to their necks in this prosecution. I think the fact
there's
that
no evidence of that, sir. There's no. I'm not going to let you continue to say that. There's just zero evidence of that.
Here's some. A guy at a senior position of the Department of Justice, way up higher and in a great big salary working for the feds, decided to demote himself and to go take a job working for a local DA. There's your evidence, George. That was easy. Shouldn't have been that easy. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
I don't have anything to share with all of you at this time. And I'll just leave it there.
On a Disciple's View.
Since it's Pride Month, I'll tell you, I watched a fantastic conversation once between my friend Katie Faust, who's the author of a book called Them Before Us, a Call for an International Children's Bill of Rights. She wrote that with her friend Stacey Manning, my common friend. Her second book, she and Stacey together, was Raising Conservative Kids in a Woke City, did very, very well. Katie's at work on a third book. And she was on a panel at the UN, talking about how kids have a right to know their parents. And she said, kids have a right to know who's mom and who's dad. Kids have a right to have a mom and dad. And a fellow panelist said, that sounds horribly, horribly heteronormative. And Katie said, well, we're a heteronormative species. I thought that was a great response and a somewhat compassionate one as well. I bring this up because I didn't get to it earlier. I should have. I live in what I somewhat jokingly, referred to as the High Mountains of Free America in North Idaho. The owners of the Old State Saloon in Eagle, Idaho, have an answer for Pride Month.
So heterosexual awesomeness is basically an opportunity to celebrate God's design for man and woman and that sexual attraction between them. Idaho's the reddest state in the country, as you know. We've got so many people here who are like-minded and who want to do what's right, they want to do what's moral. I think that this country is ready to stand up and say, hey, enough is enough. Let's stand for things that are right and true and godly. Everybody is welcome to come here and help us celebrate Heterosexual Awesomeness Month.
So that's from WorldNet Daily, who spoke with the Old State Saloon owner in Eagle, Idaho. And we opened the show and have talked this week a bit about the phrase fairness and caring. This is my new focus. You'll hear more about this. In fact, tomorrow, you're going to hear part of an interview with a woman that I did. Her name is Marie Rogerson. She works at the Leadership Institute, but she was speaking as an individual. She's taken a lot of data from Pew Research and some fellow authors to compile the two things about which moderates and liberals care. Now, we're not going to win progressives. Not going to happen. Let's recognize that. But we can win moderates. Both for America, but more importantly, for souls. There's an array of things people in the political world care about. In the case of conservatives, we care about authoritarianism. We care about liberty. We care about safety. We care about the border. We care about caring and fairness. Moderates care about two things: caring and fairness. That's it. The other things do not matter. In that way, you cannot use logic to appeal to them. So I think again of Pride Month. There was a man who was mocked. He's a leader in Spokane, which is across the border from me in Idaho. It's in Washington. He was mocked because he wept at a press conference. Someone had lit fire to a Pride intersection, burned it. This is an act of vandalism. Among many acts of vandalism. And in some ways, logically, you could say, hey, when you shove pride down people's throats, expect a response like that eventually. That's logic. That's true. Equal and opposite reactions. But that man was mocked by conservatives for crying. No. Please don't. Moderates and people who may well be available to be harvested by the Lord through us, you will lose them. I will tell you this. I have a dear family member, as close to me as you can be. She believes with her entire being that if President Trump is put back in office, if he's elected, becomes president, she believes with her entire heart, her same-sex attracted child, adult child, will be hunted. She believes it. She is terrified. Now, of course, I've told her over my dead body, anyone who ever attempted to harm your boy in front of me, I'd end them and then pray for forgiveness. But she doesn't know that about you. We must speak with caring and fairness, even as we speak the truth of how God sees sexual activity. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God, because we believe, we speak. Because he first loved us, we speak his words. Until God decides you and I can meet again together, on behalf of AFR and Randy, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.